All right. You ready?
I'm ready.
Let's start over. Let's do it. What's going on, guys? You're listening to You Can Miss Me With That podcast. My name is Luther Okay. I'm here with Tino for take two. How you doing, Tino?
What's going on, Luther? It's good to be here. And what I'm understanding is that we're knocking off, you know, two stones, right?
Yeah, we're knocking off two birds with one stone.
Two birds with one stone, right? That's right. New studio.
Yeah, new studio and taking your podcast chair.
First time ever.
You do listen to podcasts?
I do listen to podcasts.
Yeah, but you haven't listened to my podcast.
I have not listened to you. But I just now subscribed to your podcast. And so I will be listening to your podcast.
That's what I'm talking about. You got like 30 episodes. Your boy's been deep. A lot of bonus pods in there.
Okay. I'm down. Like I said, man, I downloaded it today. And so I'm eager to listen to some of the podcasts that you had. Didn't you say you had a Game of Thrones review on there too?
Yeah. Yeah. I talk all about season 8 and the disappointment that we both share about it.
Okay.
They should have taken more episodes, man. They did 6. They had a chance to do 10. They could have raked all the money in.
You know, but to defend the writers, right? I think they were working off of something that obviously wasn't there, right? They didn't have George Martin's last book to kind of go off, you know, and so they kind of had to use their own imagination, which obviously wasn't that good, but, you know.
I just think with something like that, first of all, the expectations were too high.
Right.
I'll be the first person to say that. But I think with that, maybe you take a little bit more, like, care, precaution. Like, that's what I'm thinking. And if you need the extra time, people were willing to wait. People were willing to wait for it. You take the extra time, you take the extra episodes to explain stuff. Because my thing is, a lot of leaps in logic I'm just supposed to accept. Like, the fact that after they beat the Night King, they just forgot about the Navy, I can't even think of the name anymore.
Pretty much
the
left
Iron
everyone.
Fleet.
They left everyone at what, Winterfell?
Yeah,
and that was it.
And that makes no sense. You travel with your arm because you're facing Cersei. Like,
yeah,
you know, yeah, she's.
And I was disappointed in Cersei's death.
Yes,
you know, I mean, we followed this show for what, 8 years,
yeah,
practically, and you know, we want to see her go out with a bang.
Like she crying while Ruffles going on.
Yeah,
nah,
and,
son. She
you know, I was just like, wait a minute, I waited the last 8 years for this.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I wanted a brutal death. She deserved a brutal death.
Yeah.
You know, because she was the more vile one in the whole entire show. And so,
if anything, that was being the one time both her and Khaleesi get their hands dirty. Like, they're in the throne room throwing bows, whatever it takes.
Right.
Make it brutal. Like, and I was just disappointed.
That's
all it
you
was.
Know, you know, but you know, there's other good shows coming out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, you saw HBO kind of throw the, like, this is what's going on after. Don't leave.
Yeah.
Don't leave.
Yeah.
And
but
Netflix threw in the hat in the ring. You saw they made the trailer for the Witcher series.
I did see that. Netflix. And you know, I'm even going to give a shout out here to Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Because Disney's coming out with their new streaming online, you know, here in November.
I already got too many. I can't take another.
But here's
one.
The thing. If you are a Star Wars fan and a Jon Favreau fan, right, he's making the series off of Boba Fett.
Yeah. Was it The Mandalorian?
The Mandalorian.
I'm
right?
really interested in that.
So that might actually, I mean, it sold me. So I'm gonna get it when it comes out, you know, because you know.
Can I shoot you a couple bucks show. And I hop on your plan?
And there you go, brother.
Hey,
there you go.
I really want to watch the because you know you saw Marvel come up their Phase 4.
Mm-hmm.
I'm all over that the Falcon Winter Soldier.
Falcon and Winter Soldier. I'm telling you, there's gonna be some good shows.
And what's the other one that I really want to see? The Hawkeye.
The Hawkeye.
He's underrated.
Well, yeah, because Captain America, that's what it is. It's Hawkeye, isn't it? Yeah,
Hawkeye gets his own series. I think he's going to be training a new Hawkeye.
Right.
And then Falcon and Winter Soldier basically fighting about who's going to be the next Captain America.
There you go. And I think it's going to be good, man. I mean, so we got a lot of shows to look forward to. Maybe we should invite me back on. We can have kind of a review.
Oh, I'm all in.
You all in,
Tino?
Okay. I'm down, man. I'm all in.
So reason, Tino, I wanted to get you on the podcast. You are a recently ordained minister?
I am a commissioned elder
In
the United Methodist Church. I just became a commissioned elder in the United Methodist Church. So, yes, I'm a pastor.
Yeah.
I'm a pastor in the United Methodist Church.
Okay.
Right? And so, currently, I'm still kind of in the process of to be ordained,
okay.
So to say. So, think of it more as a doctor. in residency.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Right? So, okay. Yeah. So, like, I'm a pastor, right? I'm a reverend, mm-hmm. right? But now I'm kind of, like, on probation for the next 2 years just to make sure that my theology is correct, just to okay. make sure that, you know, I'm keeping up to our codes and our ethics and our yeah. morals and all that. And so it's been a journey because it's been about 10 years kind of mm-hmm. going through this process, mm-hmm. right? And discerning and trying to figure out, okay, am I called to do this? And you know, the God that, you know, that has placed a vocation in front of us, you know, you really have to ask yourself, are you really called mm-hmm. to lead a church?
So basically it's like, we trust you, but we're going to give you another 2 years before we give you that max contract.
Pretty much. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. That's exactly the way.
Man, they treat you like Kirk Cousins.
right. So yeah, that's a great way of putting it. You know, like, hey, we're gonna have you on our team, mm-hmm. right? But you know, we're still kind of suspect a little mm-hmm. bit, you know. But we'll give you this 2 year contract, and then we'll franchise you. You know, if you can produce.
Okay.
So there you go.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, can you talk a little bit about how you got here? Like, tell us a little bit of your background to how you got to this point where it's like 2 years left, then you finally get to at least where you believe that you're supposed to be.
Yeah. So. Really, I mean, in order for me to share this story, I mean, I got to go back to my childhood. I grew up in a very devout Catholic, you know, traditional upbringing, right? My parents were married in the Catholic Church. My dad's side, very traditionalist, you know, Mexican Americans, you know. We came over, my grandfather came over here to the United States, I believe it was in 1923 with his parents. They made a living out in Laredo, Texas, joined the military. Eventually was retired in a small town called Lawton, Oklahoma. And I got nothing but love for Lawton, but we used to call it the armpit of Oklahoma, right? So my parents then met in Lawton. They eventually went up to Norman, Oklahoma, Boomer Sooner, for all the Sooners out there, because I bleed crimson and cream, and that's where I was born and raised.
I need to go to Bedlam. That is probably the one thing I need to do college football wise in my life.
It's an amazing atmosphere. I gotta hand it to you.
I'm just gonna hop in your car one
day. We'll go this year.
Don't play with me.
We'll go this year. We'll go this year.
I'll pay for my own.
You can just drive Airbnb. With me. It's only 4 hours from here.
I'll do it.
So
I'm in the car. We'll do it, man. Get
down for whatever. Only 4 hours. You can't beat that, right?
Yes.
So, but I was born in the Catholic Church. My parents divorced when I was 7. Mm-hmm. So my mom raised both me and my sister. And, you know, my dad, I kind of describe my dad, you know, as a magician, right? He appeared in my life, but then he disappeared mm-hmm. in my life, you know, and that was a struggle. But we never stepped back into the church until really I was 23 years old. And the reason why that was because not because I didn't believe or anything like that, just because my mom was working 2 to 3 jobs and
just life yeah. gets in the way.
Yeah. Sundays was a day of rest. Yeah. Really for us. Right. Yeah. And adding one more thing onto the calendar was really not going to happen. Mm-hmm. However, when I graduated from high school, I really wanted to walk on to a JUCO team to play football, because I had played football from middle school all the way to high school. Really wanted to pursue a sporting career, and obviously was too short. I hurt my back. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, you know, gifted in the football world, right? And I wasn't that great in athletics, but so I really struggled trying to really find a purpose. Try to really find an identity. So, you know, I did what probably any 22, 23-year-old college student would do. You know, I would go to class, not really do my homework, go back, work out 7 days a week, mm-hmm. Go out at night, live the nightlife, you know, because that's, you know, I mean, that's what gave me life until I was 25, and I really was sitting in a corner by myself, you know, playing some cards, and I really was really just in reflection, deep reflection, wondering, hey, what am I going to be in the next 5 years? Mm-hmm. What am I going to be in the next 10 years, right? Really struggled. Was really in a lot of poker tournaments, and I met a friend of mine who was, we were at the last round, and he was talking to me, and he invited me to go on a mission trip with him mm-hmm. To Las Vegas. And I didn't know what a mission trip was. All I heard was Vegas. Mm-hmm. I said, you know what? I'm down. Let's go to Vegas. And he said, well, here's the deal. You're going with 40 other junior high youth, and mm-hmm. this is a mission trip. I was like, what's a mission trip? You know, like, well, we go and serve in the name of Jesus and in the church. And I was like, no, you know what? That's really not my thing. But he said, Tino, I'll tell you what. If you go with me for 2 days, and if you're not having a blast in 2 days, I will buy you a room at the Bellagio and on the main strip, right, and you won't have to mess with us for the rest of the week. Okay. It was on me. And, you know, you can't pass that up, right? Yeah. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go and just, you know, head out there and then pray that I have like the worst 48 hours of my life so I can get this room. Truth is, I never got that room on the Bellagio, never got that room on the main strip. But that week, those 48 hours really changed my life and really started just hearing these kids' stories, you know, because I could empathize. I could really understand what they were going through with their addictions, their struggles, their purpose, their identity, their family drama, all of that. And, you know, I just really wanted just to be an encouraging presence for them. And that's what really got me back into the church, and specifically the Methodist Church. And that was back in 2005. And ever since then, well, the rest is history, because I was working at the hospital at the time. I really wanted to go into the nursing field. My sister's a nurse down in Dallas, Texas. But I was really struggling whether or not to pursue the medical field, because obviously, you know, you're guaranteed a job in the medical field, especially in the nursing field. At least that's what my sister told me.
They always need nurses.
Well, but then you have the ministry field, right, which is kind of wide open, but you really don't know what that entails, what that looks like. And I heard from everyone on my family and even some of my friends saying, like, you know what, you're probably going to make a mistake if you don't go the medical field route, right? Because you definitely want to have a living. You definitely want to, you know, make sure you got some stability. But instead, I chose ministry. And I was working at a church back home in Norman. Served as a youth pastor there for about 7 years. And I thought I was going to be a youth pastor all my life. And then again, in 2012, I got this nudge. And you really can't describe it. You know, I call it the Holy Spirit, right? It nudges you. You have discernment. And I really started thinking, okay, you know what? I think I want to be a pastor. I think I want to go out and shepherd a church. And so that meant I need to leave home, but then go and start looking at seminaries. And so that's what that's how I came up here to Kansas City. St. Paul School of Theology was the school I attended. And I spent a year up here in 2013, but then I went back home to Norman and served as an associate pastor at the same church where I was a youth pastor. And I served up there for 3 years, finished up grad school in 3 years and seminary. In the midst of all that, sandwiched in all of that, I met my wife, and I became a husband and a father within those 3 years. Don't ask me how I survived it, but we did it by God's grace.
I'm just trying to get there one day.
You will get there one day. I promise you, Luther. But then we had the opportunity to move back up here to Kansas City, and that was in 2017, and here we are today. Now, that being said, going through the process of being an ordained elder in the United Methodist Church, that's what it exactly what it is. It's a process, and so you have to have a psych evaluation, you have to talk with your church, you have to talk with your pastor, you have to talk with your supervisor, making sure all your ducks are in a row, and then you start have to doing the work. They give you assignments like paper, right? You know, you have to write like, I think, 28 page reports on theology, on certain topics, and you have to go through interviews. And I get it, you know, because they don't want to just take anyone, that right? I mean, just as much as we have bad teachers or bad doctors or you have bad pastors out there, right? Mm-hmm. And they want to make sure that, you know, that you're sound in your teaching and in your preaching and even in your pastoral care. So recently, just passed all of that, and so now I'm a commissioned elder in the United Methodist Church. Got commissioned back at the end of May, and so now, again, like I told you in the beginning, I'm a doctor in residency, right? Yeah. I'm a pastor in residency. So in 2 years, I'll be fully ordained.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm excited. But it's kind of an interesting time in the United Methodist Church.
Yeah. Yeah, I know your wife and I talked about it, actually, which is actually, I think, a problem. A lot of denominations, no matter who you are, it's maybe not a problem, it's a question that you now have to face.
Right.
Can you talk about it a little bit? Why do you say it's such an interesting time in the Methodist Church?
Well, it's because of sexuality, the church and sexuality, right? Mm-hmm. And especially, so this would be with the LGBT movement that is happening right now within our culture. And so a lot of churches are still, so you have your progressive side, you have your conservative side, right? Mm-hmm. And so your moderates, your liberals, your conservative, you know, however you want to describe it. But sexuality in the church has been going on for the last 2,000 years, mm-hmm. right? The topic of sexuality. Mm-hmm. And so what's going on here now in the United Methodist Church is whether or not we are deciding to not only ordain the people who are part of that community, the LGBT community. But we're also deciding as well, if we're going to, as pastors, are we going to marry same-sex couples? And so currently right now, we go off of our book of discipline, which is our, you know, our structure, you know, our book of order, sort of say, of how we govern our denomination. Currently right now, it says that we believe that LGBTQ persons are of sacred worth, but we will not ordain them, and we will not marry same-sex couples. That's currently in the book of discipline, and it got updated this past April, and that will go into effect in the beginning of the year, 2020. However, the denomination globally is going to go back in April of next year, 2020, to discuss this even further, because there is a movement happening within the United Methodist Church where we are saying this is not going to happen, right? We are excluding our brothers and sisters, and it's for me personally, it's a civil rights movement, right? And so we are pushing back against that legislative piece, if that makes sense. So that's currently what's going on in our church right now.
Yeah, are you the first denomination to really approach that question, to approach that movement, or have you heard it in other?
No. My understanding, and I could be wrong here, but one of the first denominations that was really, you know, open about this and saying, you know what, we're going to move forward with this, was the Episcopal Church, and I believe even the Lutheran Church. Okay. I could be wrong on that, but I know for sure the Episcopal Church was, you know, kind of the forerunner in this and saying, hey, listen, we're going to ordain people who are part of this LGBTQ community. We're also going to marry our same-sex couples who feel the call to be married. So, you know, I'm sure people were upset about it and they were leaving. But now this is a topic that's going in all denominations, even within the Catholic Church.
It's become a question, an issue that I think the church cannot avoid anymore, especially with the various scandals that it seems like the last couple of years have really come to light, and even previous scandals. Like, you see the movie Spotlight?
Right.
With Mark Ruffalo?
Right.
That movie was captivating, and seeing how... This was 2000, before I moved to America, and seeing how in a place like Boston and how Catholic that area of the country is, and how, hey, this is what they're doing. They just move people who've committed such acts to just different either seminaries or different churches just to avoid prosecution and things like that. And it's interesting to me. That's really the main crux of why I want to talk to you, see how churches are really approaching this issue. I don't think at this point you can't avoid it anymore.
You can't avoid it. And I can't speak for every denomination. I'll speak on what I know as far as like what I have learned and what I've gained within our own denomination when it is coming to this. And so kind of bear with me here a little bit, because I go back a little bit to what we had voted on this past April of this past year. So when we went to General Conference, which is a global event within our denomination, so globally we have, you know, representatives, delegates representing churches in Africa and Europe and, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere and even within the country, we all meet up and we have delegates representing each conference. And so they're picking on a legislative piece that is either A, the traditional plan that says that we're going to uphold what's in the Book of Discipline right now, which says that we're not going to ordain people who are LGBTQ, or we're not going to marry same-sex couples. But then you have this other legislative piece that says it's the One Church Plan. And the One Church Plan is saying that we are going to agree to disagree.
Okay.
So in other words, if I was a senior pastor of a church right now, which I'm not, but if I was a senior pastor of a church, I would tell my congregation that we have different views, we have different political views, especially when it comes to this topic, but we are going to still welcome our brothers and sisters who are part of this community. We are going to ordain people who are part of the LGBT community, and we're also going to marry same-sex couples, right? And then that's to say also that there's still people that are going to stay within our church and stay within our denomination, but still don't agree because it's against their theology.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But then you have another legislative piece that really says, no, that's even still excluding our brothers and sisters in the LGBTQ community. And so we need to just really just say, you know, we're going to marry same-sex couples and we're going to ordain persons in the LGBTQ community, right? So those are the three kind of pieces that we're looking at, mm-hmm. right? And really what we were heading for was the one church plan, mm-hmm. Because we really would say to ourselves that, you know, hey, we, at least for me, I would say the one church plan because, you know, I'm trying to articulate this as best as I can. We are living in a climate right now, right, where I believe we are afraid, mm-hmm. right? We fear what we don't know and what we don't understand.
You always hear that little proverb, like, people fear what they don't understand.
Right, right. And so what we're looking at here is kind of just breaking down some walls mm-hmm. and saying that regardless, this is one way that as a whole church, as a whole, we can move forward, mm-hmm. right? I don't necessarily agree with it, but at the same time, though, I feel like it's the best plan for us as we move forward. Mm-hmm. That did not pass mm-hmm. in this past April, but we're hoping that we can go back here next April of 2020 to vote on that piece.
Okay, now that that awkwardness is over and my phone stops ringing. Good thing we talked a little bit while we were getting ready again. I wanted to ask you about the doctrine itself. Mm-hmm. How often does that get updated? Because we just talked about it, so I want the people to know how often that gets
right.
updated.
So let me kind of rewind here a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. I talked about General Conference, where yeah. globally as a denomination we all meet up at a certain place. Mm-hmm. For example, last year was in St. Louis. So General Conference is every 4 years within our denomination. So again, that's globally. So the conference then elects delegates that are representing either their state or their conference to come out. And we usually meet, I think like this coming year, next April, or I think it's April or May, excuse me, of 2020. It will be in, I believe in Minnesota mm-hmm. of next year. But we'll all meet, and that's going to be in 2020. But we have annual conference every year within our own conference. And so I'm part of the Kansas conference, Great Plains. So we meet every May, mm-hmm. Just to talk about specifically our own annual conference, which is the Great Plains, which is Kansas and Nebraska. Does that make sense?
I know you touched on a little bit. You gave a little bit of your insight into this question, into this issue. Can you dive in a little bit more about your own personal kind of stake in this?
Yeah. Well, this is a very good question.
Yeah.
You know, my theology, you know, let me first state this, is that theologizing, I believe we do every day, mm-hmm. right? Theos is a Greek word for God, and then ology, right, is the study of. And so people who say that, oh, I'm not a theologian, I always encourage them and challenge them to kind of step out of that, because I'm like, well, I think we're always, you know, theologizing, right? You know, especially in our climate today, whether mm-hmm. it's through, you know, creation, whether it's through relationships, whether it's through political views, we're deciding who we are and who we're called to be mm-hmm. to the person, you know, that has called us to, you know, to love one another, right?
Of course.
So my theology has changed over the last 10 to 15 years. Again, I grew up in a very conservative Catholic upbringing where with this specific topic, we were saying that homosexuality was a sin, right? But you know, the more I understand sin is to miss the mark, mm-hmm. right? And we all miss the mark. And, you know, usually people who hang more towards the conservative side on this particular topic, they hold onto a couple of scriptures in the Old Testament and in the New Testament where it specifically says that this practice is a sin. But for me personally, I hold on to a lot of other scriptures, and I look at some of the scriptures in the Old Testament and even in the New Testament that if we were to take the Bible literally, word for word, well, it would be a sin for us to watch football. Right, it would be a sin for us to even hold a football, right? Because we're not allowed to touch pigskin, right? You know, I think we have to really dive in, and we have to study scripture for what it is. I have a tool how to do that, and usually I use tradition, experience, when I read scripture, and mm-hmm. and so tradition looks at the culture at the time, right? 2,000, 6,000, 10,000 years ago in biblical times, right? We, you know, obviously the structure, you know, how, you know, marriages were performed, how traditions and family were done. Necessarily, we wouldn't put that into practice today, mm-hmm. right? So things have changed over the time. And I think when we look at specific topics within scripture, especially when we're trying to relate it in our own life, we have to ask ourselves, okay, if would we really, you know, stone a woman, you know, if she committed adultery, or would we put to death a man for committing, you know, adultery on his wife, right? I think those are the things that we have to really kind of, you know, dissect. And so if you're asking me, I don't believe homosexuality is a sin. I don't think people, I think people, what's the, you asked me a question, I think, before we had this podcast on, I can't remember what it was. Can you think about it?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I feel like I just asked you, but I think it was just, oh, come on, Luther. You just had it. But I think it's just the fact that we can go back to what I said before, where it's something you can't avoid anymore.
Right.
So maybe instead of just trying to avoid it because you don't understand it, you have to confront it head on.
Right.
And just try to understand.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of ways, the thing that really astounds me, to kind of go off topic for a second, is you see people who are part of that community still come to church.
Yeah.
Especially with seeing in a lot of denominations, especially as we're both kind of growing up,
mm-hmm.
The overall stance of the church toward them, mm-hmm. and they're still like, look, this is how I feel, this is still what I believe, and I still think this is what helps me become the best me that I can be.
Right.
So I think, to me, looking at that courage and seeing the fact that, which always reminds me, remember that during Pride Day, this bishop came out, he came out and said, I believe homosexuality is a sin, and he goes into this wrong tirade, and he always says what everybody always says when they want to get the topic across.
Right,
we got to be able to protect our kids, or think of the children.
Oh, yeah.
So then
yeah.
He says that, and then the next morning on MSNBC was where I read that. First of all, they didn't realize how many of the people part of the
BTQ community,
community were part of that church, and they're all leaving.
Right.
So then the main pastor is literally begging them to stay.
Yeah.
Like, please stay. Like, we love you just the way you are. These are just questions that I think a lot of people don't really know.
So to put it more bluntly, mm-hmm. here's my view on it. I believe it's a civil rights issue.
Yeah.
I believe that everyone is created in the image of God.
Mm-hmm.
And when we start distorting that, and when we start choosing and picking what it is that we like, right, mm-hmm. or we choose to be truth, right, then I think that's when we are headed into a dark place. And I think you've seen some of that now, even in today's culture and today's climate. We are called to love God with heart, mind, and soul, mm-hmm. and then we are called to love our neighbor as we love ourselves, mm-hmm. right? There are going to be times where I necessarily don't agree with some certain things that are going on. But at the same time, though, I'm going to continue to love my sister and my brother, mm-hmm. and I'm going to continue to walk with them. I think it's an honor. I believe it's an honor to walk with my sister or brother, regardless if they're gay or not, if they're African-American, if they're Asian, if they're Mexican-American or whatever. We are called to walk this journey of faith together. That's the beauty mm-hmm. of our faith, mm-hmm. right, is that we are part of this journey together. Our faith was never meant to be isolated. And so I feel like this is an exciting time, believe it or not, for the church. The church has been reforming 2,000 years, mm-hmm. for 2,000 years, right? We come from the Catholic Church, right? Yeah. And someone got upset of what the Catholic Church was doing, and they were being corrupt. And so it took a man named Martin Luther to nail 95 theses to a door back in Germany in the 1500s. And that's what started this movement now, today, where we have all these denominations, because we're necessarily not going to agree all the time, mm-hmm. but we're continuing to move. And I believe God is at work in all of this. And I think it's overwhelming at times. It gets hard. It gets you angry. But at the same time, though, I believe we're moving forward in the right direction.
Okay. So it is awesome to see how much, at least even in my lifetime, the church has reformed, to even the fact that the Pope is talking about
it. Right.
First of all, he seems really cool. Like,
the Pope is,
like,
yes.
Like, I hang out and play some cards.
I do like this Pope.
Yeah.
I really do. And I think it's
especially with the last one quitting on the job.
Yeah. I do like this new Pope for the mm-hmm. Catholic Church. And listen, whether we agree or not, I mean, there's some things. No church is perfect.
Of course. Right?
No denomination is perfect. And the Catholic Church has their baggage that they got to sort out as well. But there's also some things that we can look at within our sisters and brothers in the Catholic Church that are doing really, really well. And there's also a movement within the Catholic Church that's pushing towards this LGBTQI movement as well. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it's exciting to see, you know, where all this is going in our lifetime. And we're getting a chance to watch it.
Yeah, and it is pretty awesome to see somebody as powerful as the Pope, whether it is talking about the LGBT. I always mess it up.
LGBTQ. Primarily, community. that is the acronym. At least that's what I've been told.
There's a plus now, I believe they added.
Yeah,
they
added some. But you know, I would say for all of us, we need to get out and educate ourselves. We need to get out there and get more awareness, and be a part of that community, mm-hmm. and learn from our sisters and brothers who are part of that community. Because that's the only way we're going to fully understand.
Right? You can't. I believe. I think it's something that I've definitely learned. That's one of the main reasons I started the podcast, because I asked this question in the first episode. Why does it seem like we're all talking to each other, but nobody's listening?
Yeah.
And I hate that. Like, a perfect example we don't know right now is the Jesse Smollett case.
Yeah. Well, and you hit it on the head, right? Yeah. We don't, we're very good at speaking, mm-hmm. right? And putting our view out there, but we're terrible at listening. Listen, if you go to a bookstore mm-hmm. and you go to the self-help section, right? Because they got all these books on how to do this and how to do that. But if you find me a book on how to listen, let me know. I'll pay you tenfold, because I have yet to find that book.
That's actually that's actually a great statement, because I don't think I can remember.
Because it's hard, right? Mm-hmm. And look how we were created, right? We got one mouth, but we got two ears. So obviously, I believe God is telling us something, right? Even mm-hmm. James speaks of this, right? That, you know, we have to be careful with our words, right? And we have to listen carefully, mm-hmm. right? Because that's how we grow, and that's how we understand. We empathize with folks. We hear folks, and it's an honor to hear their stories, and it's an honor to walk with them. And regardless if you agree or disagree or not, you're going to learn something, and it's going to change you, mm-hmm. and ultimately it's going to change you for the better.
And I just hope that you truly are listening, because you cannot hop to conclusions. Like I said with the Jesse Smollett case, where you had Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, they're all coming out and condemning what happened to him. And then all of a sudden, the cops come like, hey, this is what we really think happened with all this evidence. Now they're like, and then now all the conservatives are like, huh? See?
Right.
And then now there's all this other stuff, like, why did he get acquitted? All this stuff, like, where it's one of those things which is a shame now. Especially when you see something like that could truly happen to anybody at any point.
Right.
But then I'm just like, let me see how everything plays out.
Right.
Because I think in a perfect world, you want to be like, that's terrible.
Right.
Dude, that's terrible. Let's put our arms around this person. We're going to protect them. We're going to try and find the people who did this. And they also need to be educated. Whatever it is that needs to happen. And it's a shame now that I'm like, let me wait.
Mm-hmm.
Let me wait, because there's so much you don't know. I mean, the Tyreek Hill thing's another example.
Well, and that's just it, you know. I mean, we are living in a climate today where we are so angry, mm-hmm. where we're so frustrated, and rightfully so. I believe it is okay to have a righteous anger, mm-hmm. right? Because that righteous anger comes from an act of justice, right? Mm-hmm. We want to see justice prevail, right? At the same time, though, we also have to understand, well, wait a minute, you know, in our anger, it can kind of take us in the wrong direction, right? Where we can start, you know, thinking negative things. It can start affecting how we view people. It can start affecting what we believe. And the next thing you know, we're trapped, right? Now, I'll speak on my part as far as someone who is a man of faith and who puts his trust in God. I have to remember that my theology is bigger than God is bigger than my theology, mm-hmm. right? And I can't put God in a box, right? God is always teaching me something every day. And that's my hope. And that's really my hope for all of us, is that we can get up every morning and we can be grateful for the life that we have upon us for today, and that we have strength for today and courage for today, but that we can also live with hope for tomorrow, okay. right? That we can bring about hope.
I got one last question before we get to the rapid fire.
Okay.
If you every time I have an idea to ask a question, you answer it. So this has been like the best interview of all time.
I don't know about all that.
This has been one of the best interviews of all time. He's going to listen. He's going to get mad, but come on, Kevin.
No.
So
I'm just grateful and humbled that you have allowed me to come on and speak.
I'm so excited that you're able to come on and really talk about something that I don't think a lot of people really know, because, you know, people live in their lives and doing all these things, but then to realize that the church, whether it is one denomination or another, or even having somebody like the Pope talk about it, it's such an important issue which could really, really change the church.
Right.
And it's important.
Well, and that's what we're called to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is I believe we're called to change the world. We're called to change, change this world for the better good. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you this funny thing real quick, because when I met my wife, mm-hmm. I met her online, mm-hmm. eHarmony, and you know they put you on a profile. Like, you set up a profile and everything. It says your occupation.
Yeah. Right?
I didn't put pastor on there. I put grad student. Because let's just be honest, right? I mean, if she's going to look at that and see pastor on there, I don't think I would be married to her to this day. And we had a couple conversations through email, then conversations over the phone, and then we finally went out on a date, and we were having this great conversation. I just said, hey, listen, you know, there's something I got to tell you. Right.
Oh,
and
okay.
She goes, oh my gosh, you know, what are you, you know, are you a convict or something? I was like, no. It's just that, you know, I should tell you a little bit more about my job. And she goes, oh, tell me a little bit more. I said, well, basically, I'm an entrepreneur, right? I work globally, right? I want to plant a lot of businesses in the world for the common good. And she's getting all pumped up and everything, right? And you know, I really want to change the world for the good. And so she's really gravitating towards all of this, right? Because all this is true, right?
Yes.
And she goes, oh my gosh, what company do you work for? And I said, well, I work for the church.
Oh.
And I'm a pastor. And
especially
her eyes just
knowing your wife. This is hilarious.
Her eyes just opened really, really big, and she couldn't believe it. And she goes, you've been talking to my mom, haven't you? And I said, no, not at all. Turns out she was a cradle Methodist,
uh-huh.
right? But she was also the black sheep in her family, okay? She'll never tell you that. Right, but she always rebelled. But if you were to ask her to this day, if you were to say that you were going to marry a pastor, she's like, you're crazy, right? But you know, here we are today, right? And that's what really my hope is that I want to change the world for mm-hmm. the good, and I want to advocate for the oppressed, and I want to bring justice, and I want to bring light, mm-hmm. And I have that honor to do it here in Kansas City, mm-hmm. and that's what I'm excited about.
All right. So, like I said, last question before we get to rapid fire. So where do you see the church going in the future, especially as this question becomes more and more prevalent, that even some of the staunch people, maybe like you said, they get to that point where, like, look, we'll just agree to disagree and we'll find a way to just make it work.
I see the church being what there's a story in the Bible in Acts chapter 2 mm-hmm. where it talks really about the first church 2,000 years ago, where people had things in common and they were sharing their materialistic things. They were sharing the things that they needed to make a better life. And so I believe the church is the hope of the world. Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ is the hope of the world, but the church is his instrument, and we mm-hmm. are part of that. Mm-hmm. And we have the opportunity to bring good news. And so I believe we are going to be a church that's going to be all for all, and mm-hmm. we're going to welcome all for all. It's going to take a while to get there, but I have hope that's where it's going to be in the next 10, 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I hope that answers your question. We got a lot of work ahead of us, but God is faithful, and God is at work.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the rapid fire questions. We're almost done here.
Okay.
So for those that don't know, what exactly is the Methodist denomination of the church? Like, what set you guys apart from like the Latter-day Saints or Mormons?
So the United Methodist Church is part of the Protestant Church as a whole. So mm-hmm. you have the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. which is the Catholic Church, the mm-hmm. Universal Catholic Church, but off of that becomes the Protestant Church, which is everything that you have, you know, the Baptists, the Episcopalians, so we're kind of lumped in there. Now, granted, we have some theology that we, you know, that makes us, you know, that we disagree or agree on, but primarily what makes us different from the Catholic Church is how we view the sacraments. And sacraments are, you know, teachings that God gave us and said for us to do, which in this case, we have two sacraments in the Methodist Church, baptism and communion. So you have to be baptized. We believe that. And then take communion as often as you can, right? In the Catholic Church, there are 7 sacraments. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's baptism, there's communion, but there's also confirmation. There's also marriage. And I can't remember the other ones off the top of my head right now. Mm-hmm. But primarily that's the main difference is how we view the sacraments.
All right. So next question. I don't know if you can really get into it, but regarding this whole issue, this debate that's going on, is there any moment that really sticks out to you in particular, whether it's from a conservative or progressive side? Is there a story that you're really willing to tell to show how far that when you first jumped, kind of hopped into the debate and to where you are now, how far the conversation has progressed?
Yeah. So for me personally, last fall, I had the honor and the blessing of being a part of a wedding and I couldn't do the vows for mm-hmm. this couple. It was a same-sex couple. I couldn't do the vows, but I could deliver the message and I could do a blessing over them. I did a prayer over for the both of them, and it was for me. That was the moment that I realized, like, wait a minute, you know, that we're all in this thing together, right? Mm-hmm. We're on this journey of faith together, and it was two people, and hearing their story. And how their parents disowned them, how their home church disowned them, and how they were still looking for a church that would accept them for who they were. Mm-hmm. And all they wanted to do was have the same right that I had with my wife, which mm-hmm. they wanted to get married because that's just it. They loved one another, mm-hmm. right? And who are we to tell people that you can't love this person, that you can't get married to this person, mm-hmm. right? So it was a big thing for me. It was a big awakening for me. And so, that's kind of what, you know, pushed me now to where I am today, where I really hope to use my voice and to advocate for this community.
All right. You mentioned you play low ball, which is awesome. Because obviously I play ball. What position did you play?
I was offensive tackle and defensive tackle.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I was 5'6", yeah. right? And I was short. But, you know, they called me, you know, Rumble in the Jungle, you know, whatever that meant. But I also went by The Rock because my biggest hero growing up was The Rock. You know,
oh, okay.
I love The Rock.
Yeah, you he's know. A cool dude.
Yeah.
I mean, he might run for president.
If you smell what The Rock is cooking, right? Hey. And so...
you ever seen that DVD they put out on him by WWE?
I own it. I'm telling you, I'm a big Rock fan.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm a huge Rock fan.
It's incredible how you should just come up with stuff on the spot.
Oh, like man. The man is very charismatic, right? I mean, just so gifted. You know, he's coming out with his own bottle of tequila, by the way.
Really? It took him this long to come out with it?
Yeah, he's coming out with his own tequila.
Look, that man just conquers stuff. Like, now he just straight up taking the Fast and Furious franchise from Vin Diesel.
Right.
And I don't know how I feel about it.
We'll see what happens. I think it's going to be a good movie. I already bought tickets.
I've already bought tickets.
There you go,
like,
right?
It's one of those, like, I can't believe I'm going to watch this. And I'm saying that.
And he's pulling that helicopter with one arm in the trailer,
you're just like, I'm going to turn my brain off.
I'm just going to turn my brain off for a little bit and just enjoy this movie.
Idris Elba's Black Superman.
It's got Idris Elba in it, right. Yeah. You can't beat that, right?
That's weird. And, like, nobody from, like, the original. Oh, okay. Okay, so last question, which I ask everybody. Would you like to find a way to world peace or an end to world hunger?
I asked
everybody so far, and it's been interesting to hear the answers.
Listen, I believe we have world peace when we start educating and we start feeding our bodies physically mm-hmm. and mentally and emotionally. Mm-hmm. So I would feed an individual first before we head towards peace, because we can't have peace if one's healthy.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to feed them.
Okay.
Right? So I would definitely feed somebody first.
Okay. Well,
or excuse me, end world hunger first. Okay. And then we march our way towards peace.
Okay. We're actually part of the minority of people who said world hunger. Yeah. Everybody thinks, like, we'll get world peace, then we can feed people.
Right.
And I've kind of waffled because the explanations have actually been very good.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
I think you just got to define, you know, maybe that's just kind of, we got to unpack that. What does it mean to have world peace, right? Mm-hmm. And sure, no wars, obviously, right? We want to have education for all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got to be healthy first.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And so I'm thinking more when I say end world hunger, we got to feed ourselves physically, but we also got to feed ourselves intellectually, you know, especially in the times that we're living in.
All right. So, Dawood, thank you so much, Tina, for hopping on the podcast. Luther,
it's my pleasure, man. Oh,
I gotta run through this whole rigmarole at the end.
No.
So, guys, that was the You Can Miss Me With That podcast. If you guys have any questions for me and Tino, you can call the podcast at 805-539-2698. Or for Tino, it's 805-53-YCMWT. Yeah, I got an acronym, Tino.
All right. God bless Kansas City. Oh,
how can the people find you, Tino, before you leave?
Well, they can find me on my Facebook. They can find me on my Twitter, Tino Herrera.
For those people, before you get in there, a lot of his Facebook content is a lot of Cowboys, Oklahoma, and now Cleveland Brown.
Well, Baker Mayfield, shake and bake, yes. But, you know, I put my family up there. You know, I always want to.
I know, but just family. I'm just letting the people know before they hop in there full in. Maybe dip your toe in there.
Listen, yes, I am a Dallas Cowboy fan, but I got respect for the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. I got nothing but respect. I think
they're losing to the GOAT again. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, he's still going to be playing. I mean, it's going to be hard, but. As long as you're not a Texas Longhorn fan, I ain't got no beef with you. So it's all good. All
right. So if you want to get out of here, Tino, get on out. I'll close up over here.
All right, brother. Hey, right. God bless. All right.
You got it. All right, guys. So if you guys have any questions for Tino, like I say, you can call the podcast number. You can email the podcast at myycmwt@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Tino. All right. You guys want to follow the podcast on Facebook and Twitter. It's at YCMWT. Just search it. You can't miss it. I'm really glad I was able to get Tino. This is actually pretty quick kind of turnaround for the interview. And just being able to answer a question that, you know, not a lot of people, I think, right now really know about. And it's not like, I wouldn't say it's a war. I think it's just a debate. It's something that everybody, no matter who you are and what you believe, you kind of have to answer, or at least start thinking of an answer, because it's here, it's not getting away. And is there any way we could just find a place and accord where we can both be happy with where we're at? So thank you so much, Tino, for hopping on. I cannot wait for this episode to come on and see the reaction, because I mean, he's just a good dude to talk to listen to, and these are the conversations that I have with him when we're not on the podcast. So either way, guys, hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Season 3 is kind of coming down here pretty soon. So, guys, take care of yourselves. I need for you guys to let me know what your favorite episodes have been. Got any favorite moments? But take care of yourselves. Stay safe. I love you guys. Bye.